Wednesday, and I'm doing a little Wednesday session here, and starting with the striptease act. And I'm in my living room in Portland, Oregon, and I figured I'd get back to doing online activities on some kind of basis. Figured weekly basis at noon on Wednesdays, Pacific time. Gonna get a pickup installed in this thing soon. It'll sound better. What am I doing? Okay, getting sorted here. Good morning in the Netherlands and Australia. I can see anybody's comments if you got anything you want to comment on, and I've been working on playing songs with the mandola, and see if anybody likes it. Lincoln's bombing Baghdad, there's a famine in Tigray. Fires are burning in Flagstaff, blocking out the day. The wind blows so fiercely, the grass is turning brown. It's 116 degrees in Portland town. The spas and churches dripping with blood. A tower collapsed in Miami, damaged from the flood. Before the summer's over, who knows how many will drown? It's 116 degrees in Portland town. The prices of houses are rising like never before. Along with ocean waters, the temperatures soar. The developers develop, water tables go down. It's 116 degrees in Portland town. In the Congress, they're discussing infrastructure. Whether it should be built to withstand fire, they're not sure. They found a dead man in an RV wearing a thorny crown. It's 116 degrees in Portland town. In the farms in the valley, they're out picking cherries, dropping dead on the field with a bucket of berries. City of bridges, each one like a frown. It's 116 degrees in Portland town. No way out, even north of the border. Welcome to the New World Order. Produced by criminal corporate clowns. It's 116 degrees in Portland town. Lincoln's bombing Baghdad, there's a famine in Tigray. Let's see, let's move this a little bit so we can maybe see things a little better. I don't know, let's see. Okay, is that going to be better? I think that'll be a little better. Nice to be able to see the mandola. So, I don't have a plan here. I've been messing around with working these songs out on the mandola lately. And but I haven't been singing and playing the mandola so much as just playing the mandola. But I figured I'd do some singing and sing some mandola songs for you guys, whoever you are. As I walk on by, see the people on their porches, chairs out on a deck. Sometimes you can tell which ones received their checks, which ones are still waiting after all these many weeks, wondering if this is what it smells like up Shit's Creek as I walk on by. When my children ask me, I'm not quite sure what to say. Why the playground's always empty where the kids all used to play. Why the people cross the street now whenever we come near. Where did all the people go who used to be here as I walk on by? I go out with my headphones on like everybody else does, listening for news suddenly relevant because we all want to know how the virus might transform. All of us still here, weathering this storm as I walk on by. As I walk on by. Quite an eventful Wednesday for news. We are looking at the possibility of overturning Roe v. Wade here in the U.S., and then maybe Russia invades Ukraine and China invades Taiwan all on the same day. Could be. It's not a slow news day. Another morning, see my baby's cheeks, glad to be around to have another week, watch the magic happen, find all there is to learn as the planet floods and burns. Wake up another morning, grind some coffee beans, turn on Al Jazeera, marvel at the scenes. Towns reduced to ashes while the twisters turn as the planet floods and burns. Wake up another morning, picking on these strings, One more day to be here. Find out what life brings. The horizon's red and hazy. That much I can discern. As the planet floods and burns. Wake up another morning. Watch the neighbors drive away. Heading to a warehouse to work another day. Leaving me to wonder how fast this wind can churn as the planet floods and burns. Wake up another morning, see the Twitter trolls complain about the fascists who are living on the dole, demanding safe place in the boxcar and other such concerns as the planet floods and burns. Wake up another morning, see the orange hue. Know what needs to happen, don't know what to do. Show me to the ark, where's the bow and stern, as the planet floods and burns. Wake up another morning, in the now again. If I want to see the future, I can count to 10. History, you'll find it in the tombstones and the urns as the planet floods and burns. As the planet floods and burns. Wonderful. Oh, wonderful. I don't know. I never get tired of seeing people commenting who are coming from different places. It's my favorite thing about the internet. We have Australia, Cardiff, the Netherlands, Belfast, Switzerland. Wonderful. And given that we have Cardiff, I'll have to do this song now. I mean, there's other songs I could do based on those random places, but this one works pretty well on the mandola. '31, the age of industry begun. For the working folk of Wales, life was short. With wages cut again, it was only sensible that then folks took over, shut down the debtors' court. The gentry pulled the wire, told their men to open fire and restore the rule of their estate. But as the night descended and the battle ended, the soldiers had all fled behind the gate. They chanted cheese and bread, and our children must be fed in the days when Wales rose against the crown. They chanted cheese and bread with a bloody loaf above their heads. Yeah? When the red flag flew in Merthyr Town. The message went out east and west to put the gentry to the test. The cavalry was ambushed and turned back. After so long playing defense, the time had come now when the workers were the ones on the attack. They chanted cheese and bread, and our children must be fed in the days when Wales rose against the crown. They chanted cheese and bread with a bloody loaf above their heads. When the red flag flew in Merthyr Town. The crown sent soldiers by the score till order was restored. Then came Dick Penderyn's execution. Another martyr for the cause, meant to give us pause the next time people call for revolution. They chanted cheese and bread, and our children must be fed in the days when Wales rose against the crown. They chanted cheese and bread with a bloody loaf above their heads. When the red flag flew in Merthyr Town. I need to figure, why can't I get that chord? Okay, there it is, but okay. I need to practice this more, but that's okay. I'll just subject you to it. The nice thing is you can always just leave if you don't like it. There's a rumor that the decision in the Royal Courts of Justice in London around extraditing Julian Assange to face 175 years in prison in the United States for doing journalism too well. They may, early December, they may decide on that. Behind these prison walls, there's a man who's won awards for the work that he has done and all that it affords, such as the knowledge of the horrors committed in our name. They can't stop the message, so the messenger gets blamed. Behind these prison walls, solitary confinement, in a land of rolling hills and royalty and other such refinement, is someone who is a hero. The whistleblowers everywhere who helped them tell the world of the crimes of Tony Blair. Behind these prison walls, you will find a mortal man. The reason why we know what happened in Afghanistan, when the soldiers of the empire, whose sunset long before, were torturing civilians in their terror war. Behind these prison walls is a part of WikiLeaks, an eloquent orator, but you won't hear him speak. Locked away in silence, one who knows too well how those in power act when there's another war to sell. Behind these prison walls is one who stands accused of exactly what offenses the U.S. has refused to say precisely which, or to try to clear the mist, or to explain how he's not the same as other journalists. Behind these prison walls is a person they deprive of most of the things in life that keep us all alive. Person being tortured as we stand here now for revealing the war crimes. Why, when, where, how? Behind these prison walls, our very right to be informed of what the hell is going on is the teacup in this storm. With knowledge there is power, so the solution by the crown, 24-hour-a-day indefinite lockdown. Behind these prison walls, yes, so I'm kind of figuring out how to play these songs as I go, which is not recommended if you're trying to be a professional, but I'm just doing this, whatever I'm doing. And I'm still a professional. Maybe I shouldn't be. Here's a song you've never heard before. There's going to be a video eventually. The same brilliant Danish filmmaker who filmed that last song I just did when I was singing in front of Belmarsh Prison 2 years ago in London. There's a new video coming out sometime with this song. And, I mean, in case it's not obvious, the song is based on speeches that Stella Morris, Julian Assange's partner and the mother of his two youngest children and a member of his legal team and a brilliant, brilliant activist and organizer. Stella, in her speeches at the Royal Courts of Justice that I was attending a month ago in London, she was often making reference to the Saudi journalist who worked for the New York Times, Jamal Khashoggi, in reference to the fact that, as we know, obviously the Saudi government had it planned to extrajudicially assassinate him when he went into the Saudi embassy in Turkey, which they did. And if the British government had known that the Saudi government was planning on assassinating him, would they have extradited him to Saudi Arabia had they been asked to do so? And I think a lot of people think maybe they wouldn't. But the British government is currently planning, or at least considering the plan, to extradite Julian Assange to the country that has been planning his extrajudicial assassination, as you have learned if you were paying attention to the recent Yahoo News investigation, where they interviewed 30 different former CIA and other security officials who were involved with Assange's imprisonment or house arrest or whatever we want to call it at the Ecuadorian embassy, where they were planning on having a gunfight in the streets of London to be carried out by British police. If it came down to live fire in the streets of London, the British police were planning on firing the shots that would kill Julian Assange. But they're pretending they don't know about this. If you were wanted by a nation not run by the rule of law, if senators and generals had so often made the call that he should be hit with a missile if he had said that on TV, what would you expect from a legal authority asked to extradite him back to this country if his name were Jamal Khashoggi? Wanted by a nation which had sent its spies to arrange a situation where he accidentally dies. They had secretly listened in on all his conversations. If they had explicitly made plans for his assassination, would you write it off as just a strange conspiracy if his name were Jamal Khashoggi? If he were wanted by a nation they so frequently condemn in human rights tribunals held at the UN for torturing their prisoners for the ways they are confined, if the state had a different name, would justice be so blind? Would your courts just hand him over, take him from his family, if his name were Jamal Khashoggi? If he were wanted by a nation which committed the war crimes exposed by this reporter so many times, would you just take the word of the head of state who said he would be so happy to see a bullet in his head? If their main witness was coerced, would you send him to that country if his name were Jamal Khashoggi? If he were wanted by a nation that did all these things and more, if it were Iran or Russia, would you be keeping score? Would you trust their prosecutors, all the nice things that they say about their justice system before they take him away? What if his name were Julian? Would you send him across the sea if his name were Jamal Khashoggi? If he were wanted by a nation not run by the rule of law. Well, Belfast. I was just in Belfast. I love Belfast very much. I wrote a blog, a very lengthy blog post about my travels in Europe, in case anybody wants to read it. And it includes a lot about Belfast. This is a true story about Belfast. Say it started long ago. Keep one lifetime in your sights. People were marching for basic civil rights. The marchers were attacked. The press made wild claims. Anything that happened, Republicans were blamed. The mood that was incited quite intentionally all over the six counties in the loyalist community was an atmosphere of hatred, the kind that burns and kills if you live in the wrong house or stand too close to the windowsill. In the pogroms of 1969. With torches, pikes, and guns, neighborhoods were attacked, supported by police if anyone dared fight back. Fight back people did, kept the loyalist mobs at bay. Far more homes would have been destroyed if not for the IRA. Defensive lines were formed, as best as could be done. 50 buses hijacked and lit up in the summer sun. Surrounding the burned out shells of the houses of Ardoyne, while just beyond them Orangemen sang the Battle of the Boyne. In the pogroms of 1969. Thousands fled the carnage. Hundreds of homes burned down. There was a refugee camp in Dundalk as big as any town. The British Army invaded the north and started building walls, separating ghettos from the bog side to the falls. If you want to understand the world you live in, you have to peel back the layers and look beneath the skin. If you do that, you may find so much of these troubles began half a century after the black and tans. In the pogroms of 1969. You could say it started long ago, or keep one lifetime in your sights. People were marching for basic civil rights. Let's see. All these adjectives coming in are at least as good as applause. I love it. Although the crowd in Denmark, sometime in the, I guess it was maybe summer of 2020, I don't remember. I had a gig for the Socialist Youth Federation in Denmark, and then they were gathered in small groups in different parts of the country, and it was dark there, light here, dark there, nighttime, and they were watching in groups of three, four, five, and holding lighters up, you know, in the dark, and it felt very much like singing for an audience. It was really nice. Nothing quite as good as the actual physical thing, but here's a song. I wrote the song several years ago. If we were to change any of it, we could change like one word in the third verse to reflect updated politics, but basically it's all the same. ¶¶ two jobs and living in a tent. When a house costs $1 million and you can't pay the rent. When politicians say they'll help, but it keeps getting worse. Each time the landlord lobby pulls the strings of the purse. When the human right to housing isn't even part of the debate. You know you're living in a failed state. Millions of citizens are spending half their lives locked up in a prison for trying to survive. One last lofty junkin' just to have a place to stay. When the prisons pay the senators to look the other way. If you have to be a criminal to put food upon your plate, you know you're living in a failed state. When you're facing climate breakdown, when the trees are all on fire, when half the country's underwater, when a climate change denier runs the nation, and the opposition party votes for oil rigs and pipelines, it's not so much a country as it is a corporation. Buckling under its weight, you know you're living in a failed state. When your nation is an empire facing daily blowback, and the only thing your leaders can think to do is attack. Bipartisan consensus that we need to spend $700 billion before the year's end on a military budget to make America great. You know you're living in a failed state. Almost every day some psycho with a gun has to open fire on a crowd before it's done. When a high school becomes a free fire zone and all they can say is it's okay now he was acting alone. Buy some armor, pray to God, and hide behind a gate. You know you're living in a failed state. You know you're living in a failed state. You know you're living in a failed state. And, yeah, speaking of court cases and failed states, this is, do this one. Stephen Donziger is in prison right now. It's very unclear to me what he's doing there, but basically, he won a $7 billion settlement against the Chevron Corporation on behalf of five indigenous tribes in Ecuador whose land was totally destroyed by Chevron. And they have not paid a cent to the five tribes, but they spent a lot of money on corporate lawyers, and some of whom have managed to somehow or other get also brilliant activist, but Stephen Donziger is in prison in New York State. Who knows what he's doing there? It's gotten very little attention. When Chevron came to Ecuador, it was Texaco back then. They did there what they did so many times again. Ocean of sludge stored in pits unlined, no stone unturned, no resources unmined. They called it the Chernobyl of the Amazon. 1,000 square miles, dead and gone. When Chevron came to Ecuador, it was a dictatorship there. What happened in the Amazon, they didn't care. As long as they made money, let the oil flow where the waste went. No one wanted to know, and if they did, they could be bought. And if not, they could be abducted, tortured, and shot. When Chevron came to Ecuador, the location was preferred by the oil corporation. Because they had free reign, there was no oversight. And if anyone complained, then one night they'd not be seen again. It was a torture state. This was why Chevron thought it was so great. When Chevron came to Ecuador, it was paradise on earth. They turned it into a land of stillbirth. They left behind the ruins and took all the loot. Now they're trying to silence the ones who brought the lawsuit. Why was Donziger detained? A corrupt judge knows. And where are all the billions that the company owes? When Chevron came to Ecuador. When Chevron came to Ecuador. Thank you. Well, let's see now what. Oh, here. This one. I think this one works well with this. Mandola. Mandola. Apparently the name originates from the word for almond, I think. Mandel, right? I think. And that they, some of them are almond-shaped. Kind of strange. Word origins. First of May, known around the world as International Workers' Days. You'll still see people marching every corner of the earth. St. John to Santiago, Kerala to Perth, all keeping alive the fantasy, what could happen down the line. When the workers of the world combine. You can see us gathering early in the morning. Some are celebrating the shackles we have shorn. While so many billions are just waiting for the moment that we might stop losing the class war. When someday we can all say, yeah, we're doing fine. When the workers of the world combine. Time arrives, maybe it looks like May Day, like a festival that comes home and doesn't go away. Every race and gender, every walk and station, with the working class united, every land and nation. Then just watch what happens when we follow the same sign. When the workers of the world combine. Of the year on the 1st of May, known around the world as International Workers' Day. I worked these songs out on the mandola and then I didn't practice them at all. I think I said that already, but that's kind of the it's gonna be good next time. By the time I give this concert in like 6 months, it'll sound good. I heard them marching, chanting, kill them all. I saw millions of people trapped behind ghetto walls. I saw the soldiers shooting every Friday afternoon. I saw some exposed to sickness, with others made immune. I saw the tear gas in Al-Aqsa, eyes open wide. I saw the mob attack the motorist and beat him till he died. I heard the generals lying. I saw the tanks moving in. I heard the settlers shouting, let the killings begin. Look up above, hear the ear-splitting sound. Watch the buildings crumble to the ground. See the planes in the sky there by the sea, so much like New York City. I heard the wailing voices of the dying and forlorn, of the kids who couldn't get out, those who weren't warned. I saw all the schools and hospitals in pieces there still from the last time the IDF came to maim and kill. I saw the brave children with piles of rocks facing tanks demolishing city blocks. what's left of the grove but some sap. As they try to wipe Palestine off the map, look up above, hear the ear-splitting sound. Watch the buildings crumble to the ground. See the planes in the sky there by the sea, so much like New York City. I heard the DNC and all the Republicans too pledge allegiance to Netanyahu. I heard the president starting the story with rockets from a ghetto where people live in rubble, starved by an embargo. I saw a whole lot of crocodile tears on display for the zillionth time. I heard politicians say, can both sides please de-escalate? On one side are the occupied, on the other an apartheid state. Look up above, hear the ear-splitting sound. Watch the buildings crumble to the ground. See the planes in the sky there by the sea, so much like New York City. I heard them marching, chanting, kill them all. I saw millions of people trapped behind ghetto walls. That's this one. Here's a good one for this instrument, sung recently in Belfast to great effect. About a man whose mural you can find on the walls of West Belfast, various locations. He grew up on a farm in a troubled Irish land, under foreign rule and the British Crown's command. His father fought for Ireland 50 years before, but the Free State cut their losses and the English won the war. When internment without trial was the order of the day, when his brother was arrested and his friends were blown away, when he was beaten near to death, he decided come what may, he'd throw his lot in with the provost and he joined the IRA. In the occupied six counties, perhaps it never will be known, all the foreign soldiers in Armagh and Tyrone, who decided to head back across the Irish Sea so they wouldn't have to meet the man from south of Derry. He never wavered in his battle for Irish liberty, and the crown would soon regret the day they made him enemy. The Brits called it bandit country, and it filled them all with fright. In the borderlands, he who walked the hills at night. Up the provost, that's what he said. Three little words that filled the British crown with dread, with a rifle on his shoulder, a timer and a fuse. Long may we remember Commandante Francis Hughes. Long may we remember Commandante Francis Hughes. Once he was surrounded by the SAS. How he might escape was anybody's guess. In his boots and camouflage, he didn't miss a beat. He walked right past the soldiers and out into the street. Once he came upon a checkpoint, the soldier didn't want to die. He recognized our Francis and the soldier waved him by. He didn't want to find out if he could take what he could give. He knew there'd be a shootout and the soldier chose to live. Up the provost, that's what he said. And from this farmer's son, better men had fled with a rifle on his shoulder, a timer and a fuse. Long may we remember Commandante Francis Hughes. Long may we remember Commandante Francis Hughes. He was the North's most wanted man with his photo everywhere. But he eluded capture with his wit and dyed blonde hair. For 6 years he was active, three times as long as most. He became a legend north to south and coast to coast. He came upon two soldiers out one night on patrol. They shot him in the firefight and the bullets took their toll. He crawled off into the bushes but they found him the next day. Put him on a stretcher and carried him away. Up the provost, that's what he said. With a shattered bone and a body full of lead, with a rifle on his shoulder, a timer and a fuse. Long may we remember Commandante Francis Hughes. Long may we remember Commandante Francis Hughes. They beat him and they tortured him and they gave him 80 years. When they brought him to the H blocks, he was greeted there with cheers. He went right onto the blanket, and when the hunger strike began, he was the first to volunteer along with Bobby Sands. He was an Irish soldier, that's how he did his time. He knew he was no criminal when occupation was the crime. Bobby Sands had passed beyond us where Francis soon would be, and although he couldn't stand and he could barely see, up the provost, that's what he said, as they carried him to hospital to lay in his deathbed with a rifle on his shoulder, a timer and a fuse. Long may we remember Commandante Francis Hughes. Up the provost, that's what he said, and soon there'd be another standing in his stead with a rifle on his shoulder, a timer and a fuse. Long may we remember Commandante Francis Hughes. Long may we remember Commandante Francis Hughes. I'm glad some people like that one. Let's see. What else? What else do I have here? That kind of... Oh, this one. This machine is dangerous. It communicates. It can carry memes that can destabilize a state. It can carry rumors, whether true or not. It can sow discord like an agent or a bot. It can bring people together. It can unify. Or it can spread half-truths and lies. This machine is dangerous. It can light a fire. There may be no limit to what it can inspire. Bring a person to the edge of sanity and back. It can mobilize a mob to attack. It can fire ammunition with each swing of a pick, faster than Jackie Chan can kick. This machine is dangerous. It's locked and loaded. Each string is a grenade that hasn't yet exploded, because it exists here in the world on the net. Whether it's on Twitch or on TV set, with words, ideas can spread, each one a potential bullet in the head. This machine is dangerous. It can make you dance. It can make you feel like maybe you have a chance. It can spread a shell of brand of ketchup. It can save your soul. It can create division, if division is the goal. It can build a movement, or it can call it out. Of one thing at least there is no doubt. This machine is dangerous. Let's see. What was I thinking of? Yeah, with all this, I wrote about it in the blog post recently, if anybody wants to read it. But the polarization of society all over Europe and here is really depressing. And I just think the left is about as messed up as the right is on a lot of this stuff, which is especially depressing, because seeing all these different people who are upset with their governments about things related to mandates and masks and virus and stuff. I mean, those of us who are all for getting vaccinated and wearing masks and all that, like me, for example, we can easily look at this movement as a bunch of right-wing wingnuts, but it's not. In fact, actually, you talk to these folks and you find out they're not at all like right-wing wingnuts. They're just people who don't trust their governments, and that's a very common thing in most countries because the governments are not trustworthy. And Denmark hasn't had these issues mainly for the most part because people trust the health department there. It's not how it is in most of the world because there's inequality in other countries. You know, they have it in Denmark too, but nothing like in other places like Germany or England, for example. But after reading so many stories about people dying on their deathbeds who were not vaccinated, I wrote this. They lied about the wars, took time to figure out that democracy and freedom was not what it was about. They said we'd fight the terrorists, but all that I could see was I was occupying someone else's country. They lied about the weapons. They all were so convinced. The generals on the TV haven't heard from them since. They say it was an accident. I think it was their plan. They spread the lie on CNN and NPR and C-SPAN. They lied about the jobs. All the pundits used to say before the good jobs went away. Sign up to this free trade bill. Win-win all around. Now half the guys I used to know are 6 feet underground. Lying is all they seem to do. Looking at us on TV, they pretend they care, but it's all about the money, which anyone can tell. If you have half a brain, why I should believe them now? It just seems insane. Talk turned to the virus, what we all stood to lose. I was not the only one who thought it was fake news. I just went about my life like I normally would do. So maybe I'll catch a cold, I thought, or a little flu. They lie about so much, I wish it were not true. But from this hospital bed, if I could just click undo, I guess I would have worn a mask, stayed home to quarantine instead of being intubated. Hooked up to this machine, you can say that I'm an idiot. Maybe, I don't know, but before I take my leave, before I have to go, before they stick me in a box with quarters on my eyes, there's lots of blame to go around here, and I know where it lies. They lied about the wars. Well, what else? Let's see. Something else here. Looking through my... Yeah, we'll do that one. Well, thanks y'all for listening. I'm going to do one more song in this little Wednesday concert. I'll be back on another live stream thing, perhaps with the mandola, perhaps with another instrument, perhaps, I don't know what I'll be doing. Maybe it won't even be music at all, but I'll be back next Wednesday at noon Pacific time, 8 p.m. in Belfast, 9 p.m. in Copenhagen. Some ridiculous time in the early morning in Australia. My name is John Riley. I'll have your ear only a while. I left my dear home in Ireland. It was death, starvation, or exile. When I got to America, it was my duty to go. Enter the army and slog across Texas to join in the war against Mexico. It was there in the pueblos and hillsides that I saw the mistake I had made. Part of a conquering army with the morals of a bayonet blade. So in the midst of these poor dying Catholics, screaming children, the burning stench of it all, myself and 200 Irishmen decided to rise to the call. From Dublin City to San Diego, we witnessed freedom denied. So we formed the St. Patrick Battalion, and we fought on the Mexican side. We formed the St. Patrick Battalion, and we fought on the Mexican side. We marched neath the green flag of St. Patrick, emblazoned with Erin Goldbra, bright with the harp and the shamrock, and Libertad para Republica. Just 50 years after Wolf Tone, 5,000 miles away, the Yanks called us a legion of strangers, And they can talk as they may, but from Dublin City to San Diego, we witnessed freedom denied. So we formed the St. Patrick Battalion, and we fought on the Mexican side. We formed the St. Patrick Battalion, and we fought on the Mexican side. We fought them in 5 major battles. Churubusco was the last. Overwhelmed by the cannons from Boston, we fell after each mortar blast. Most of us died on that hillside in the service of the Mexican state. So far from our occupied homeland, we were heroes and victims of fate. From Dublin City to San Diego, we witnessed freedom denied. So we formed the St. Patrick Battalion, and we fought on the Mexican side. From Dublin City to San Diego, we witnessed freedom denied. So we formed the St. Patrick Battalion, and we fought on the Mexican side. We formed the St. Patrick Battalion, and we fought on the Mexican side. Thanks for listening, everybody. Oh, east of the 205. I did have that worked out, and I'll do that sometime soon. And, yeah, thanks for listening. I'll be back and keep on keeping on. And, yeah, what else do I have to say? That's about it. If you want to support what I'm doing, my strange excuse for a job, go to patreon.com/DavidRovix. Otherwise, don't worry about it. And I'll see you down the road, I hope, in the real world, COVID or not. Bye for now.